Welcome to Whitley on Wine with your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist Robert Whitley.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me. Don't try to fool me, bejewel me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a grape.
Welcome to Whitley on Wine. I think today we're going to go mountain climbing. Is that right, Janet?
You got it.
We're visiting with Janet Myers, the winemaker at Mount Veeder Winery up in the Napa Valley, and Matt Ashby, who is the vineyard director. Say hello, Matt.
Hello.
So, your motto is wine without altitude.
Wine with altitude.
What is that all about?
Well, wines that come from the mountain are just a breed apart. I mean, it's a very difficult growing region. The terrain is rough. The mountain is steep. The vines are basically clinging to the hillside. So what we get from that is small vines with really concentrated fruit. It just makes magnificent wines.
Okay, we should tell people, though. You're in the Napa Valley, but you're not in the valley.
That's right.
And I think that's one of the really interesting things about appellations like Mount Veeder, where you're located, and Diamond Mountain and Howell Mountain, is they're all within this Napa Valley appellation. And they all make very famous wines, but you have you also have very famous wineries and very iconic wines down on the valley floor. But these are apples and oranges. These are two very, very different things.
That's right. Well, Napa Valley as a whole, though, is a fabulous place to grow Cab. I mean, just one of the places that really exceeds in that. But within that, mountain fruit is going to express differently than valley floor fruit. Both very good, just nuances on a theme.
So, you know, I brought up your motto, the wine with altitude. We also hear that from the wines of Argentina, particularly the Malbecs from down there, because they're grown at very high elevations. What impact does elevation have on the kind of wine that you would get at Mount Veeder or Howell Mountain or Diamond Mountain or some of these other locations? How is it different than, say, a Cabernet Sauvignon from somewhere on the valley floor that's grown by, Mondavi or someone like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Matt can speak to this as well, but I would just say when you're on the mountain, you've got much less soil to deal with. So you're talking about very shallow soils, very rocky. The vines just, they grow differently. They're much smaller. So you're starting with that. The soil is different. And then you've got slightly different almost climate up there. You can be above the fog line. So on a late summer morning when the valley floor is bathed in fog, you're getting the sun already on the mountain, at the top of the mountain. We're at 1,000 to 1,600 mm-hmm. feet. So the ripening pattern's going to be a little bit different.
Matt, is that a good thing?
Yeah, that is a very good thing. I mean, we're looking for something that is really unique to the place where it's grown mm-hmm. when we're talking about fine wines in Napa Valley, and something that can be unique to its place, different than the other mountain appellations, I think is very important.
But, you know, everybody talks about, making great wines with long hang time, and having that fog on the valley floor kind of keeps it a little cool because in the summertime, as you know, you live there, Napa Valley gets extremely hot. And so the fog sort of, slows everything down a little bit and allows for a long ripening season. So how is it good to not have that fog cover when you're up at the elevation? Is it because it's colder at night?
It's not as cold as not at night either. It's a little bit warmer at night. The cool air will kind of settle down in the valley floor. So you have a larger diurnal swing in temperature down the valley floor.
Oh, you used a big word.
When you're up on Mount...
This is radio. Diurnal.
Diurnal. The difference in temperature, in the low at night and the high in the daytime. But it's less up on Mount Veeder. In the morning up on Mount Veeder, when we go up to work in the morning, it's a little bit warmer than it would be down the valley floor. Mm-hmm. But and again, we're above the fog line, so we get that morning exposure, but it won't be as hot in the afternoon. I think something that's unique to Diamond Mountain, Spring Mountain, and Mount Veeder, mm-hmm. as opposed to Howell Mountain and Atlas Peak on the east side, we're on the west side of Napa Valley. We get a lot of that coastal, cool coastal afternoon breezes coming over from Sonoma Valley. They feel like they're ocean breezes when I'm up there in the afternoon. That's my favorite vineyard to be out in on a hot afternoon in the summer up on Mount Veeder. It's cooler up there.
And let's orient people. Mount Veeder is a mountain appellation. It's on the west side. It's in the Mayacamas Mountains. So the Napa Valley is north-south. Mount Veeder is the first mountain appellation you come to. And then you have Spring Mountain. That's kind of the center of the valley. And then you have Diamond Mountain. Those are the ones on the left. And on the right, you have Howell Mountain. And do you consider Atlas Peak a mountain?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Atlas Peak's a mountain. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between mountain wines from the east side versus the west side?
Well, the difference in the at least the climate, I would say, would be that it's hotter on the east side than on the west side. And Janet?
Yeah, well, it's definitely hotter on the east side. I would expect the tannins to be different. I mean, mm-hmm. I haven't worked with a lot of fruit from the east side. Obviously, Mount Veeder.
Yeah, but you taste the wines.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So the tannins are probably going to tend to be probably a little bigger on the east side, I would say, because there's more heat and especially the afternoon sun.
Yeah.
The beauty of Mount Veeder and the whole Mayacamas Range is that the sun is passing to the west. So by the time you're in the late afternoon, that 5 o'clock when it's baking, we're already getting the benefit of the break in the trees and the mountain providing a break in the sunshine. And so we get a lot of tannin, but they're kind of finely grained tannins.
Plus you're a little closer to the ocean, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah,
makes it a little cooler.
We're the southernmost appellation.
I did a little bit of a taste experiment at a wine dinner a year or so ago, where I had a wine from the Cabernet from the Sonoma Valley, I believe it was the Monte Rosso Vineyard, and then I had Spring Mountain Vineyard, and then I had the parallel, the Philippe Melko wine from over, what do you call that, Pritchard Hill area. Mm-hmm. And you could just see as you went from the Sonoma side of the Mayacamas, where it was leaner, more Bordeaux-like, to Spring Mountain, where it was a little riper, a little more powerful, and then you got over to the east side of the valley, to that Pritchard Hill area, and then you got kind of a real dense, weighty, jammy kind of fruit. And I attributed that to getting further and further from the ocean.
Yeah, it's going to be drier and warmer as mm-hmm. you get away. So that is going to influence it. The other thing about Mount Veeder, which I think contributes to the character of the wine, is all the trees and the bay trees in particular. Somehow that forest gets into the grapes. I don't know how to explain it, but if you smell a glass of cab from Mount Veeder, it's like you're on the mountain. I mean, just the smell, it smells like the forest. It's just like it's brambly and big and wild. It somehow gets in the wine.
Now, are all mountain cabs like that?
Well, I think all mountain cabs tend to have big tannins. I don't know that they always have
the earthiness.
Or the bay. But they're especially where we are in the Mayacamas. I mean, there's full of bay trees, and it really lends a really beautiful complement to the character of the cassis and the black fruit we get from the mountain.
Now, Matt, does the climate where you are, because not only are you closer to the ocean, being on that side of the Mayacamas, but you're further south, so you're closer to San Pablo Bay, you're closer to Carneros, it's a little cooler there. How does that impact the kind of fruit that you get versus, I mean, I know you talk to other people in the other appellations versus what they get.
Yeah. I think it lends itself to hang time. And so we have more of a chance to ripen those fruit flavors along. Mm-hmm. So we'll get red fruit or some black fruit. But what we try to avoid is overexposing a vineyard in general. So we won't get like overripe flavors. We won't get pruny flavors in the wine. So as long as the fruit isn't green underripe, but it's ripened adequately, but not overripe, so that it's pruny. So it lets
it's
you balance.
Hold that thought. We have to take a break. And when the music comes up, that means Lou's trying to get us out of here for a break. Whitley on Wine will continue following these messages. Talk to me nice. You've got peel me a grape.
And now, back to Whitley on Wine. Slowly. With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
We're back. We're continuing our mountain climbing expedition with the nice folks from Mount Veeder Winery in the Napa Valley. And Janet Myers is also the winemaker at Franciscan Vineyards. And Janet, I have to tell you, I won't call it a revelation because I've known for years that these wines have been good. But I have a little stash of the 2002 Cuvée Sauvage Chardonnay. I got to tell you, I think it's one of the best Chardonnays ever made in California. Now, I realize you arrived in 2003, but I love the richness combined with the really steely acidity of that wine. And it's aging well. It's holding up well. And, you know, I'm always so used to just drinking that wine when it's fresh and it's young. And I just unearthed this old stash that I had in the past year, and I've been passing it around to friends and taking it out to restaurants with me, and people are blown away. It's really a delicious wine.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
Well, ages very, very well.
Well, and that's one of the things we're trying to do with that wine, or what I want to do, what we want to continue to do, is it's built to be very rich up front, but also the acidity is firm enough, and I really celebrate the minerality.
Mm-hmm.
That's just gonna keep going and keep giving, and yeah, it's fun to make.
I think that's what you're talking about is what distinguishes the great Chardonnays that we find in the world. You take one like Lewin Estate from Western Australia, mm-hmm. It has that wonderful richness and like it's so Burgundian, and yet it has that steely acidity, which you also find in Burgundy. And then what I find is when other wineries try to emulate that and make the same kind of wine, a lot of times they just don't have the grapes to do it, and they fall on their face. The richness isn't supported by that kind of acidity that can carry the wine for a long, long time, and you end up with something that kind of falls apart.
Yeah, or it's trying to be two different things. Yeah.
So let's do a little biographical sketch here of you and Matt. Tell me about your interest in wine and where it came from, and your path to Mount Veeder and Franciscan.
Well, you know, like a lot of winemakers, it wasn't a very straight path. I mean, I was born and raised in Illinois on a fruit orchard. So I had the agriculture.
Well, there's fruit
and
wine.
The fruit. Oh, yeah.
There's fruit
yeah,
wine.
It all makes sense when you look back. But, mm-hmm. you know, at the time, I didn't grow up really knowing a lot about wine, but did a degree in biology. Didn't want to be a doctor. Started grad school. Got itchy feet. Moved to London. And I was going to say...
Oh, there's a lot of wine there.
There's a
lot. Actually,
yeah.
There is a lot of wine.
There is a lot
it's a
of
great,
wine.
It's a great wine market.
It's a fantastic wine
Brits
town.
And the Brits love wine.
They do. And they don't have a big industry of their own. So mm-hmm. you walk in a wine shop and there's a wall of California.
Absolutely.
There's a wall of Chile, a wall of France. So I was just blown away by the introduction. And I intended to stay 6 months and I stayed 4 years. And during that time, I waited tables and drank wine and went to Italy and visited vineyards. And just got really interested in it, and then the light bulb went off. Hey, wait a minute! This is an industry and a career. So it was really easy with my biology background. So I came back, went to Davis, did my master's in enology there, and since then I wanted to kind of get a taste of the world. So I did a harvest in Italy. I did one in Margaret River. Near Lewin Estate.
So where were you in Margaret River?
A little tiny Chardonnay producer called Piero.
Okay.
It's sort of a cult Chardonnay in Australia.
Okay.
We made a little bit of red.
Isn't Margaret River a great little
Oh,
location?
My God.
What a place.
It's fantastic. Surfing and wine.
Oh, yeah.
And
the beaches are pristine.
Yeah, the beaches are... And nobody's there except for the dolphins.
And the winemakers.
And the winemakers.
The
yeah.
winemakers.
Yeah.
The winemakers all break. Yeah. You know, when the surf's up, the wineries clear out. And the vineyard, the field workers, they disappear. They all go, they'll jump on their surfboards.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Down there, do you surf?
I did when I was there, body surfing. Oh, yeah, you'd work in the winery and then go down body surf until it got really busy.
Famous sharks?
No, I didn't get that far out.
It's pretty shark infested.
Mm.
It can be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And where were you in Italy?
I was at Antinori. I worked at the Santa Cristina estate.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was very cool.
So did you live in Florence?
Actually, no. I lived just a few miles from the estate in mm-hmm. one of the homes that the Antinori's owned.
Oh, cool. That's a nice area.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I was a cellar rat and just pumping over Tignanello and Salaia, and it was great fun.
Wow. So, I guess if you're making wine in the United States or California, Napa Valley is
Napa
sort of the holy grail.
Right.
So
well, so while I was at Davis, I did my first internship was at Mondavi.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1993. And I did my master's work with a vineyard in Napa Valley. And then so I came back. It was kind of the place I knew. So I did a stint at BV for Harvest, and then I went over to Stag's.
So you work with Joel?
I work with Joel and mm-hmm. Jeffrey, yeah, and Bob Macheski, yeah. That was a great learning experience.
Great crew.
Fantastic.
Yeah, good
wines. It was excellent training. And then I went over to Stag's Leap Wine Cellars. I was the enologist there.
So you worked with Robert? No, the other
Cellars,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wine Cellars,
yeah.
Warren's Place,
that's
which
right.
is now Warren's sold.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, who bought it?
Chateau
St. Michel?
Yeah, right, and the
yeah.
Antonori's.
Yeah.
So it's circles within circles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I went to Martini, Louis Martini. Mm-hmm. I was, when you mentioned Monte Rosso, it kind of warms my heart. I love that vineyard. So I was assistant winemaker there for 4 years, and then I came to Franciscan and Mount Veeder in 2003.
That's quite a nice little tour around the wine world. I mean, some of the greatest places that I could think of to drink wine, to make wine, Tuscany, Western Australia. I can't believe you ever left Western Australia, though. It's so gorgeous out there.
Yeah, well, I had a job offer back in California, so there was a carrot to leave. But
plus, there's not a lot to do other than surf in Margaret River.
That's right.
You know, in Perth, the nearest big city is 3 hours away by mm-hmm. car. Mm-hmm. Well, so. And Matthew.
Yes, sir.
How did you get in the wine business? What was your pathway?
Well, my pathway, I was also at Davis as an undergrad, not sure what I was going to do with myself. Had an interest in biology and science, and just happened upon an intro to winemaking class. And the light bulb went off for me one day in class, just sitting there going, wow, I could do this for a living. This is a career for somebody, and it sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a blast. And
so how did you took a winemaking class but ended up being a viticulturist?
Ended up with a viticulturist. I was terrible at chemistry, unlike Janet.
Yeah, but you can be a winemaker and just hire an enologist.
Yeah, that's true, but you have to have very skilled knowledge at chemistry if you're going to be a really good winemaker.
Oh, okay.
And in Napa Valley, all the winemakers are very, very,
very
good.
Very, very good.
So I tended to go towards the agriculture side anyway. I had a grandfather who was a farmer, grew up on a farm in Nebraska, and so I kind of emulated him, I think, and in that regard. That sounded a lot more fun to me. I really wanted to – I was looking for a job that was going to be outside, that I could get my hands dirty. And mm-hmm. I think farming, agriculture, and viticulture is exactly like that.
Well, you know, we're talking about mountain climbing and making wines at altitude. You've got to know how to drive those steep hills, too, in your pickup truck
right.
or your Jeep or whatever.
And a lot of times if you get lazy, you can't drive and you got to get out and you got to walk.
I mean, I've been on some vineyard tours where, you know, your heart's kind of in your throat. You know, guys are just whipping around and, you know, you're looking down some steep ravine. And,
oh, yeah. No, he drives. I walk. I park the Jeep and walk, because there are some slopes at Mount Veeder you can't even walk up. You really have to find another way around because it's so steep.
So anyway, let's get back to Matthew. Ooh, don't want to do that again. So Matthew, so you decided you wanted to be in the farming side of winemaking, which is just as important as the winemaking side.
Yeah.
When you got out of college, where did you work?
I got a job at R.H. Phillips. Out mm-hmm. In Yolo County, which wasn't too far from Davis. I was driving 45 minutes out to
the famous night harvest place.
The famous night harvest place is too hot in the daytime to harvest, so they harvest at night. and I was just a sort of a field hand, a grape sampler, and worked mm-hmm. a little bit in the cellar that sort of year. And then I got called back from the vineyard manager that just before I was graduating. He said, you know, would you like – we got a position open again for you this year. Would you like to come back? So I did a second summer with them as sort of a beginning, very basic entry-level viticulturalist. And then I got another job offer from a friend of mine who was down in Fresno the following year.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up spending 2 years down in Fresno, two full years down in Fresno. And that was table grapes and raisin grapes, stone fruit, that sort of thing. So it was a real good introduction for a city kid like me who didn't grow up on a farm.
Where were you from originally?
I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
So I grew up in the suburbs and decided I was going to be a farmer. So that's an odd path as well, but I really needed a basic knowledge. I had the theory down from the education at Davis, but mm-hmm. I didn't have time on the tractor, actually disking, actually mowing, doing those sorts of tasks.
So how did you get from table grapes in the Central Valley to fine wine in the Napa Valley?
It was pure luck. I after 2 years of Fresno, it was too hot for me. I was going to go back to Tahoe. I was going to go up to Tahoe and spend a winter skiing and sort of just try to refocus myself and decide if this was really what I wanted to do. Just before I was about to leave Fresno, a contact that I'd met there said, hey, I heard you're leaving. What are you going to do? And I said, well, I don't know. I'm going to go to Tahoe. I'll be a ski bum for winter. And kind of figured out, he said, well, I've got this guy in Napa Valley who really needs someone just like you. So, of course, you never say no to an offer like that.
No.
Came up, interviewed, and I was hired. That was right at the end of the harvest down in Fresno, which was the end of August. Beginning of September,
so
I was up in Napa Valley.
What
I did
year?
Another harvest.
What year
that
would
was
this
99.
Mm-hmm. And who? What winery was it?
It was a very small vineyard management company.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a local old guy, grown up out in Pope Valley, and had a real just a local knowledge and a very small company, which turned out to be a blessing for me.
And we should tell people Pope Valley is in the Napa Valley. It's another small appellation within the broader appellation of the Napa Valley.
That's right.
There's some pretty good grapes up there.
Pretty good grapes out there. He was definitely a country boy, one of those old school guys that are still around in Napa. And he had a lot of knowledge, and it was a great job for me to get my foot in the door in Napa Valley and really take the knowledge I'd learned from Fresno, from table grapes, and bring it into winemaking. It's a completely different animal. It's the same grape. Same species of plant, but a completely different world. So,
what in your background prepared you for dealing with the rigors? And I will say rigors because it has to be, as Janet was explaining earlier, much more challenging to grow good grapes on steep hillsides than on the valley floor. What prepared you for that, or did you just sort of when you got to Mount Veeder, wing it a little bit, or did you have somebody that you could lean on for some background and advice?
Yeah, I had a lot of guys like I still lean on today. Those are all the supervisors and the vineyard foremen that are kind of underneath me. When you get hired as a vineyard manager on a brand new property, you know, you're supposed to be calling the shots, but without a relationship, a previous experience with a single vineyard, a specific site like Mount Veeder is very challenging. So you really have to lean on the employees that are all around you and that experience. You go to the winemakers and you say, okay, well, let's taste this wine together. What's this performing like? And you walk the vineyard. You try to do a lot of study and investigation. You look at the soils. You want to dig soil pits. And you really try to get your arms around a place.
And, now, how many acres do you have under your control there?
On Mount Veeder, we've got 42 acres that are in production.
Mm-hmm. And of the estate, you know, because you can't plant everywhere on the mountain. How big is the property itself?
It's about 120 acres total. There's three ranches totaling 120 acres, and only 42 of those are in production. The rest of it's forest.
Okay. We have to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the wines, okay? Whitley on Wine will continue following these messages.
Crush me some ice. Skin me a peach. Save the fuzz.